All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 47 in this American History program of History at Our House for the elementary class. Today's topic is the Colonial Wars and their aftermath. So, yesterday we were talking about the competing colonies of the English and the French. So I'm going to go ahead and bring that kind of back up onto our screen here and just remind you of what that looked like. We know, focusing on the right-hand side over here, right, we had the English, the 13 English colonies in pink, along with some extra work they were doing up in Canada up there too, huh? And then we have this big New France behind it with the French runners of the woods, right, going upstream, downstream, all these rivers, systems that go from New France all the way down to Louisiana here, making this big network behind the English colonies. So coming back to this map, we got this big, huge blob of New France, and it looks really big and impressive. And we know that these two countries, France and England, were worst enemies forever. And so they were going to fight over this sort of stuff. And the more they bumped into each other in the Americas, the more problems there would be. So as it turns out, there were three wars between them that occurred mostly for European reasons. So I'm just going to go ahead and bring those up here on screen. And there were three wars between the colonists of the English colonies and the French colonies that didn't actually have any change of the situation. So notice they were named after the kings or queen at the time. So the first one was called King William's War. The second one was called Queen Anne's War because she was the queen of England at the time. And then there was King George's War. And so these wars we're not going to pay attention to because they were fought. And then at the end, everything went back to the status quo ante bellum. Can anybody guess what that means? Now, you might have heard the expression, the status quo. Some people want to protect the status quo. Some people want to destroy the status quo. Whew, what is that thing? What is the status? Like this, you know, we use the expression status, right? What's your status? Report on your status, right? What is going on, right? The status quo, the way things are. That's the status quo. Some people like the way things are, some people don't, right? Okay, so that's the status quo. Ante, does everybody know what language this is? Right? Abby, what language is all this?
Italian.
No, nice try. There's a language that it would make more sense for it to be a part of. Rosetta?
Latin.
Latin, right. So, cuius regio, status quo. All right, that probably didn't make any sense. So, right, a lot of important expressions that we have are Latin expressions. Now, and so what the reason why we don't study these other three wars in our history in any detail is because everything goes back to status quo ante bellum. The way things were. So now what would it be? Ante bellum. Abby might have an idea. Go ahead.
War.
Before, ante is before, right? And bellum is a war, right? So, the way things were before the war. So, wait a minute. If you have a war, and at the end, things go back to the way they were before the war, how important was that war? If things are the same before and after, Jeremy, how important would you say that war is?
was very important.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, to the people who were living at the time, and people who died in the war, oh my, it was terrible for them, right? But we are looking at the past from 2015. So we are interested in the events that changed the world into the one that we live in. So from our perspective, when we look back to find things that are important, we're not interested in things that don't change. Well, unless they are still the way they are now, they turn out the way they are now just like they did before. Well, that's kind of interesting. But things do change. I mean, history is very different. So the present is very different from the past. So we're mostly interested in the things that changed. So those wars that went back to the status quo antebellum, not so keen on those. This is the one that we are keen on. Because in this war, there was a radical change. So the world became very different than it was before the war. Abby, did you have a further thought or question on that?
Oh, sorry.
Okay. So, now, before I continue on with this, I have to let you guys know about a change of the names that I'm going to be using, which is sometimes people's names change, right? Or the names that we use change. And in this case, if you look back on this map over here, but focus on the European side, I want you to notice a change in that little rectangle there that I drew, which I hope you can see. It's a pretty obvious change, right? Rosetta can tell me what the change is.
Now the pink is covering all of Ireland.
Not just Ireland, but what is this part that is in the north?
Scotland.
Sorry?
Scotland.
Scotland, right, exactly. So what's going to happen is we're going to go from talking about England, which happened to rule Ireland at the time as well. But this is really that we were talking about the kings of England, okay? And then we're going to go from that to talking about not just England, but something else. What do we call that today? The United Kingdom of Great Britain. Something or other. What's the something? Jeremy?
Britain.
Britain, right, exactly. So what you're going to find is, up until this point, I've been talking about France and England, and they are worst enemies forever. Well, in 1707, as it turns out, you don't need to remember that date, but in 1707 there was a law called the Acts of Union, and so what happened was Britain and England and Scotland became a united kingdom. That's why we have this thing called the United Kingdom with a certain flag. Actually, we could have fun just looking at the flag one day. Because the flag of the United Kingdom contains the flag of Scotland and the flag of England and the flag of Wales. So it has all the flags in it because it's a united kingdom. So once that happens, we're talking about Britain, not just England. Okay, so I'm going to start using a term. You're going to notice that from now on, I'm going to be using the term British when we're talking about them, not just English. You'll notice also that sometimes I'll slip back and forth, right? Because it's kind of England is the most important part of Britain, so it's natural for people to sometimes slip back and forth. So I just wanted you to be aware of that, that when I say England or I say Britain, or I say English or I say British, that I'm mostly going to be meaning the same thing, okay? Which, of course, would not make anybody in Scotland very happy, but that's the way it goes. But the Scottish recently voted to stay in the United Kingdom, so they can't complain too much. All right, so let's continue on now with the story of Britain and his desire to retain control of its colonies in America and to deal with France in this most important now conflict, which is going to occur, called the French and Indian War. Okay, so this is the big one. This is the one where things are really going to change. And we are going to encounter a young officer named Major George Washington. Major George Washington. Now, we are used to thinking of George Washington as one of two other things, right? If you know about the American Revolution, he's a general, all right? That's a higher rank. And also, you will remember him as a president, most likely, right? So, but now, at this stage of the history of America, George Washington is a major. And he is going to have the job of going into this Ohio country on behalf of the Ohio Company and Virginia and going and kicking out the French. Telling them, we are tired of you taking this area. We want it. And therefore, actually, this map is a better one to see here because right there, it's labeled. You can see it labeled on the map, Washington. And 754. His job is to go from Virginia into this territory and kick out the French. Well, as it turns out, the English did not realize just how many Frenchmen there were that had gone there. And when George Washington went and he made this little fort called Fort Necessity, he was way outnumbered on his first expedition in 1754. So actually, he had to surrender and he had to march back to Virginia. He was fortunate that the French, when they defeated him and basically he didn't want to fight, he surrendered, they allowed him to go back to Virginia. And then George Washington joined the army of a man named General Braddock. And you can see him going back here in this red arrow in 1755. And this is where the French and Indian War really starts to pick up. And this is where Washington, this character who's so important for American history, also starts to become an important person in history. Because on this expedition, General Braddock was killed. Here's a painting of it, actually. It's not a bad painting. It's kind of an interesting painting. And so what happened was the British expected kind of, and Europeans in general, expected wars to be fought in a certain way. If you ever study the way that European armies fought, they kind of treated war like a board game. You would move the pieces into place and there would be armies, and the leaders of the armies would always be lords and kings who were always these really important, more important people than everybody else, supposedly. Right? And so when the armies would fight, the lords and the kings would let the normal people kind of shoot it up and kill each other. And there were rules that said, you're not supposed to attack the lord. You're not supposed to attack the king. It's kind of not civilized to do things that way. And so when European armies fought, they expected to kind of behave in a certain way. They thought it was civilized. Not really, but that's how they thought it was. But what happened at the beginning of the French and Indian War was that the French and the Indians didn't care for those rules, didn't believe in those rules. And so what happened was, this is a pretty cool painting. It really does dramatize the way that the French and Indians thought of fighting against the British. The British are down here in this little valley. And, well, what's happening is the French, runners of the woods here, these characters with their Indian allies are coming now. And instead of fighting in a kind of honorable European way, they are shooting from behind the trees and behind the rocks. And who are they shooting at first? As a complete violation of the rules of European warfare. Who's the target immediately if they're going to fight a war? Patrick, who's the target?
I think the target's the guy on the black horse.
Well, yes, but who is on that black horse?
Maybe it's the chief.
The leader. The leader, exactly.
I also noticed that they're pointing their guns at him only.
Yeah, exactly. See, it's the opposite of European war. You're not supposed to do that in European war, except in this war, they're doing that. That's exactly what they're doing. Shooting the leader first. So, I mean, that's actually really smart if you think about it. What's so smart about shooting the leader first? If you were fighting war, that actually makes sense. What's so smart about shooting the leader first? How do armies work? Right? Nash, go ahead.
Because the captain, the leader, controls their army, so...
Yeah, the leader controls the army. The army looks to the leader, right? He's the one who gives what? What do we call that in an army when the general is short shouting out to everybody? What is he giving them?
Directions.
Directions, or we call those the orders, right? He's yelling out the orders, the commands, right? And so everybody's expecting that. So why is it so smart to shoot the leader first? Well, because then who's in control of the army after that? Right? That creates confusion. That makes it very dangerous. And so actually, all of the great commanders in history have always understood this. Alexander the Great was a good example in ancient times. He would always attack the leader first. He designed all his battles in order to capture, defeat the leader. He didn't care about the foot soldiers like your kind of European generals would do. So yeah, what happened was Braddock was killed. And here in both of these paintings, we have a Major Washington. Now, along with a lot of the other officers were being shot or killed, Major Washington took over and salvaged this battle and retreated after that. So now, this is just a neat story. The only reason really why I'm telling you this story is because it involves George Washington. So we want to know a little bit more about him as a young officer, because this is the man who is going to go on and become what a lot of historians, and I agree with them, they call him the founding father. So in other words, what they're saying is, among all of them, there was one man who was such an important leader that he deserves to be called the founding father. And George Washington, I think, deserves that designation. So yeah, it's kind of neat to see him as a young officer being a good leader and as a military leader and struggling with these difficult challenges in a war. And then we're going to see him become a general. And he's going to be an amazing general, as we're going to see as well. So he's going to learn lessons like this. But for now, what still was going to have to happen was that if you look here back here now on our map of New France, the heart of New France and the heart of all of the French colonies in America was Quebec. And so in order to win this war, the English were going to have to go to Quebec and conquer it. So this is what you see here on this map, which I can post to the class webpage, the kind of a map of some of the major battles and thrusts and so on. We see this naval expedition going here. And first they had to attack a fort over here that was blocking the entrance into Canada. And then once they defeated that, we have this character named General Wolfe in 759. And he goes and he attacks Quebec. And this becomes the most important battle of the most important colonial war. There's actually a pretty cool painting of it. I don't know if we'll have time to look at it in History Through Art. But there's a pretty cool painting of the battle between General Wolfe and the French commander, General Montcalm, at Quebec. And it was the most important battle, and the English won. It was a great battle with about 5,000 troops on each side, and the English won. And, well, the outcome of that is a pretty amazing outcome. The outcome is this. Right? The outcome is English control of North America. Yeah, there was a little bit of Spanish activity over there. And a really curious fact was that Russia had expanded all the way over there, too. You might notice that. But the truth is, by far, the most important power in North America was England. And in fact, you wouldn't necessarily be able to know it from looking at this map. This was a war that the French and Indian War was a part of a bigger war. The French and Indian War was a part of the first global war. The first war that was fought all over the world. And we can see another important fact about that war over here. Something else was starting to happen in that part of the world. Does anybody know? The pink, of course, is starting to grow, right? Compare the top and the bottom. What part of the world is that? Good geography review. What part of the world is that? This subcontinent here, it's called. Wyatt? Henry?
This is Wyatt here.
Yes?
India?
Yeah, that's right. India and more broadly South Asia, right? The subcontinent. And so Britain was starting to conquer India. And indeed, pretty soon they're going to have more. They're going to have more of it. And in fact, if you're looking down here, England is going to start to take over New Zealand and Australia. And as it turns out, England is starting to become, in 1763, England is starting to become the most important country in the world. Patrick, question, comment?
Well, it's just that I noticed something of the Holy Roman Empire, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
There appears to be no more yellow in it.
Oh, yes, exactly. This is getting really messy. And so the only part that I'm marking is the part that was controlled by the Habsburgs. Right. So I just left that blank because it's just not important enough. All right. So that's fine. But the most important thing here is that Britain was starting to become the most powerful country in the world. And I would say, starting in 1763, the world is starting to have a center for the first time. This is kind of a neat thing, right? We talk about the world today being America-centric. Well, for the first time, the world was starting to have a center in 1763. Not entirely obvious just from the colors, right? You wouldn't be able to pick it out right now from these particular colors. But it is the case that the British Empire was becoming the center of the world. The world was starting to become, you might say, Anglo-centric. Okay? And England was the first great superpower of the world, really. And so the world was starting to become Anglo-centric. The kings of England, or the kings of Britain, were imagining themselves as the rulers of the world. The rulers of the greatest nation on earth, and the rulers of a great global empire. And well, that kind of ambition, and that kind of desire for power can be pretty corrupting, right? And they were looking at all of what they had done, and in particular, they were looking over here at America, and they were saying, well, we sure had to work hard to get control of that. And we had to, that cost us a lot. It was very difficult to do. It's going to be very difficult to keep control of that now. So we're going to have to work even harder now that we've accomplished it. And so the King of Britain was thinking that the colonies needed to help out more. He was thinking that, well, these colonies were costing him so much. And he wanted them to contribute more to this great adventure that was forming the British Empire. So he wanted them to be more under his control, more doing what he wanted them to do. Because, well, we've talked about the colonies and what life was like there. And the truth is, they were very separate. They were off on their own. The king is far away. He's across the Atlantic. They're used to kind of doing their own thing. And, well, now, though, they are really an important part of an empire. They're not just these little colonies that don't have too many people in them. They're big colonies. They're part of an empire. And the king really wants to take control of them. Remember what was part of the definition of a colony. A colony is a distant territory that people from a home country go to live in order to do what? In order to be independent and do whatever they want? No. In order to do what, Rosetta?
To claim that bit of land for their home country.
Yes, in order to bring under the control of the home country. Right, the control of the home country is the most important thing here. And so what's going to happen now? Our title for today was, right, the colonial wars and their aftermath. So aftermath means the consequences. What's going to happen now that the British Empire has worked so hard to take over this land? What are the consequences? Now the British king is going to want the colonies to do what he expects of them. He's going to expect them to be under his control. Because that's what a colony is supposed to be. It might be that they've been relatively allowed to do their own thing so far, but that's not the plan. The plan is control. They're supposed to be under the control of the king. And so this is now what's going to lead us to the American Revolution. Now, why? We still don't quite have a picture that's going to help us understand why. So we need to learn a little bit more about something, an ingredient here that's a part of our story. Because we have one of the ingredients. We have Britain is now in control and the king wants more power over the colonists. Now, this is something that has happened to every people in the world, in every country, in every part of the world. There's been a king, and the king always wants more power. Always. That's nothing new. And what has happened in other places is that, well, the people have to decide how much they want to be ruled by the king. Have to decide how much they're willing to be ruled by the king. And if they're not, what happens? Abby?
They rebel against the king.
They rebel, okay. But once they rebel, and that's a very good word, Abby, they rebel, or they have a rebellion. Once they rebel, throughout history, everywhere else you look, China, India, Egypt, Mesopotamia, doesn't matter where you look. After they rebel against the king, what do? Are they all of a sudden free? What do? Rosetta?
Didn't he put a tax on tea?
Oh, no. I'm asking a general question, Rosetta, not a specific one about this king at this moment. I'm asking, what do people do throughout history? What have they done everywhere when the power of the king becomes too great, when he becomes a tyrant? Wyatt?
Well, what I think that it is what they do is they depose the king. And they are like the Greeks, where they wanted freedom, they just put in a no king.
Yeah,
and then that's dying they get too powerful, they're deposed that king and put in a new king.
Okay, there you go. Exactly right, Wyatt. So remember why we have this anger fact. There was only one, there are two places in the whole world where people had decided not to have kings. So what happened everywhere else, and what happens in Europe all the time, was the king was in charge, and if you didn't like the king, you rebelled, but then after everything was said and done, you went back to having a king. So that's what's called a rebellion. That's not that big of a deal. But what we are going to have is a revolution. That is something much more interesting. What is it? What's the difference between a rebellion and a revolution? I'll give you a quick answer. We'll develop this answer over the coming weeks. Okay? But a rebellion takes you back to the status quo. You get to go back to having a king. A revolution, it means that you've got a rebellion and some huge, important change. Huge, important change. That's what we're going to see, is that the American Revolution is going to involve not just rebelling against a king who wants more and more power and more control of people, but a huge, important change. But why would that be? If everywhere else in Europe, everywhere else in the world, if people rebelled against their king, they went back to having a king, why would people who are English colonists not do that too? Why would they do anything differently than everybody else? That's the puzzle that still remains. That's the question that still remains. Abby, do you think you might have an answer?
I thought maybe, what they would do is that the reason is that they wanted to be free.
Yes, certainly, but this whole idea of being free and what that means is not something that people have ever understood. If they understood it, if it was easy to understand, then people in China would have had freedom a long time ago. People in India would have had it a long time ago in their ancient civilizations. They never had it. So there's something that's tricky about figuring out this idea of freedom. So there was something going on in these colonies that had to do with understanding freedom better than any time before. The question is what? So we're going to look at that a little bit next week and more after the test. Because next week is going to be the test for the whole colonial period. Okay, so we are going to have a test next week, and then we're going to move into the story of the United States proper. But the answer is, the English colonists knew about this. They studied history and learned from it. But more than that, they were English, and there was something special about being English that we haven't talked about yet. There was something special in English traditions, something special about being an Englishman that was better than anything else at the time. So when we come back next week, we're going to talk about why it would be that English colonists would make a revolution, not anybody else. Okay. Wow, that's it. We're well over time. That's all we can do for today. Tomorrow is History Through Art, of course. And then we return next week to talk about what was so special about England. What was so special about English colonists that would lead them to make a revolution. All right? Great, everybody. Thank you very much, and talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye, Mr. Bell.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.